This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been sentenced to time already served in Britain as part of a plea agreement with the U.S. Justice Department that secures his freedom. Plea was entered Wednesday in a U.S. court in Saipan, the capital of the Northern Mariana Islands, U.S. Commonwealth in the Pacific. The deal resolves a criminal case involving the receipt and publication of war logs and diplomatic cables that detailed U.S. military wrongdoing in Iraq and Afghanistan. The judge pronounced him a free man after imposing the sentence. Assange then left Saipan, heading for his home country of Australia. The U.S. military showed reporters its peer project in Gaza as it takes another attempt at aid delivery. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani.
A $230 million pier project that the U.S. has built on the coast of Gaza to deliver badly needed humanitarian aid to Palestinians is running again. The military toured international journalists around the pier on Tuesday. It was the first time foreign media was able to witness its operations. Reporters saw U.S. vessels ferrying trucks full of aid from large cargo ships stationed out at sea to the pier. The trucks then drove the aid to the beach. Though aid is making it that far, it still faces distribution difficulties.
The United States is urging working towards a diplomatic agreement that would allow Israeli and Lebanese civilians to return to their homes on both sides of the border. That's according to U.S. Secretary of State Lloyd Austin Tuesday.
Hezbollah's provocations threaten to drag the Israeli and Lebanese people into a war that they do not want.
Shelling on Israel's northern border has led to the evacuation of tens of thousands of people. This is VOA News. Kenyan President William Ruto said on Tuesday that security was his utmost priority after protests against a bill to raise taxes descended in a deadly violence. Details from Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner.
Scenes of chaos in Nairobi on Tuesday after protests against higher taxes turned deadly. Video showed some bodies lifeless in the street after police fired on demonstrators trying to storm the legislature, killing at least five people and wounding dozens more.
Mr. Speaker, sir, I'm here to address you.
Footage obtained by Reuters showed some protesters inside Kenya's National Assembly chamber demanding the resignation of Kenya's President William Ruto. In a televised address to the nation, Ruto said the security of Kenyans remained his utmost priority and blamed the violence on, quote, dangerous criminals.
International court seeking the arrest of Russian officials over an attack on Ukrainian civilian targets.
The court's accusing former defense minister Sergei Shoigu and chief of staff General Valery Gerasimov of war crimes and the crime against humanity of inhuman acts. The court says warrants were issued because judges considered there were reasonable grounds to believe the men are responsible for missile strikes carried out by the Russian armed forces against the Ukrainian electric infrastructure from October 10, 2022 until at least March 9, 2023. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. officials are warning doctors to be alert for dengue causes as the tropical disease breaks international records. Dengue is spread by mosquitoes and has been surging worldwide, helped by climate change, according to scientists. The virus remains less common in the continental United States, but in the 50 states so far this year, there have been three times more cases than at the same point last year. Most were infections that travelers got abroad. Officials warn of the growing threat locally acquired from the bites of U.S. mosquitoes. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued a health alert to doctors on Tuesday. Recapping our top story, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has now been sentenced to time already served in Britain as part of a plea agreement with the U.S. Justice Department that secures his freedom. The plea was entered Wednesday in a U.S. court in Saipan. That is the capital of the Northern Mariana Islands, which is a commonwealth in the Pacific, a U.S. commonwealth in the Pacific. The deal resolves a criminal case involving the receipt and publication of war logs and diplomatic cables that detailed U.S. military wrongdoing in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Buck in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's president vows his government will uphold his constitutional obligation to protect the country.
I assure the nation that the government has mobilized all resources at the nation's disposal to ensure that a situation of this nature will not recur again.
Several people are shot as protesters stormed Kenya's parliament after lawmakers approved tax hike. Zimbabwe fights increasing drug abuse cases, especially among the country's youth. Somalia suffers increasing security threats as ATMIS troops prepare to leave. In South Africa, the African National Congress is concerned about what it calls outrageous demands by a coalition partner for specific cabinet positions.
Negotiating through leaking demands to the media is an act of bad faith, and this practice will not help the cause of any of the parties in the negotiating table.
Nigeria launches emergency measures against cholera, and we will look back at 2020 ahead of Thursday's U.S. presidential debate. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenyan President William Ruto says his government will uphold its constitutional obligation to protect the country. The president spoke Thursday evening as Kenya's anti-tax protests took a deadly turn. Protesters, led mostly by the Kenyan youth, wanted the 2024 finance bill rejected because it includes new taxes on items such as bread, vegetable oil, sugar, and manufactured goods, including sanitary towels and diapers. The government says the taxes are necessary to fund development programs and reduce the country's public debt. News reports say police shot dead 5 people as protesters took over a part of the parliament building. President Ruto blames criminal elements for infiltrating what he calls peaceful protests.
I assure the nation that the government has mobilized all resources at the nation's disposal to ensure that a situation of this nature will not recur again at whatever cost. Accordingly, I have directed all the organs of our national security to deploy measures to thwart any attempts by dangerous criminals to undermine the security and stability of our country. To the young people of Kenya, who I must thank for helping our country organize our democratic discourse around issues, a conversation you have begun around pertinent issues of our nation will continue to inform our policy and governance. As I promised on Sunday, this conversation will not be in vain. I will not only champion for the cause of issue-based, policy-oriented, and tribe-led engagement on critical national issues, but also provide a framework for this conversation to be processed and its outcomes implemented. However, a conversation on any subject matter must be conducted in a manner that respects and honors the foundational values upon which our nation is established, namely constitutionalism, the rule of law, and respect for institutions. It is very painful for Kenya that a conversation this crucial was hijacked by dangerous people who have cost us the kind of loss we have incurred as a nation today. It is possible that the criminals who rained terror on innocent people and attempted to challenge our law enforcement deployments are still determined to continue with their dangerous behavior. I assure the nation of the government's determination to fulfill its constitutional duty of protecting the people of Kenya against all forms of harm. I hereby put on notice the planners, financiers, orchestrators, and abettors of violence and anarchy that the security infrastructure established to protect our republic and its sovereignty will be deployed to secure the country and restore normalcy.
That's Kenyan President William Ruto speaking Tuesday evening following another day of deadly anti-tax protests. Several people were shot outside Kenya's parliament on Tuesday as police clashed with protesters who stormed the complex after lawmakers passed highly controversial tax increases. The U.S. Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has the story.
Police fired live ammunition outside Parliament Tuesday afternoon after tear gas and rubber bullets failed to disperse the thousands who had gathered to protest the tax hikes. Eyewitnesses tell VOA they saw a number of bodies on the ground outside the building, and news reports say at least five people were killed. Meanwhile, fires broke out in the Parliament buildings after protesters made it past police barricades. At least two vehicles in the area were set on fire and burned. Protesters had demonstrated peacefully near Parliament in Nairobi most of the day to demand that lawmakers vote against the 2024 finance bill. However, the bill was approved on a 195-106 vote. One protester told VOA he disagrees with what the government is trying to do and had to be there to make his voice heard.
We are protesting against government impunity. You see that the finance bill is something that is not going to make us Kenyans live at peace. And you see that we've tried to talk to the government, but they're forcing it down our throat. So I've decided as a youth to come here and protest and tell them that we are the people, because government is made by the people. So we are the people, and we want the government to listen to us.
Kelvin Moses works near where the protests were taking place. He told VOA the demonstrations have affected many businesses in the central business district.
The business is really down. The traffic, the flow of customers has really been affected. As you can see around the CBD, there are very few shops are opened, and we hope that this matter can be resolved as soon as possible, because we business people, we are feeling the pinch.
After the vote, some lawmakers fled the parliament complex as hundreds of protesters broke through police barricades and rushed inside. Kenya has seen a growing youth-led movement in recent days against the tax increases, which the government says are necessary to continue to pay the interest on its high sovereign debt. Lawmakers made some compromises on the tax bill, dropping proposed increases on bread, car ownership, and financial transactions. But that was not enough for protesters who say the cost of living is already too high. The protests have been led by young people. However, Kenyan lawyer Javas Bigambo tells VOA the opposition to the finance bill is not just limited to the youth.
There has been the assumption that the protests merely a creation of the Gen Z or the youth in the country, forgetting that these protests, organic as they are, have continued to receive overwhelming support from civil society organizations, from farmers, from manufacturers, from the private sector, from religious leaders.
The finance bill still needs President William Ruto's signature to become law. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Kenyan police arrived in violent, ravaged Haiti on Tuesday on a long-awaited mission to help wrest the Caribbean nation from powerful gangs. Wearing camouflage uniforms, helmets, and rifles, about 200 officers descended from a Kenya Airways plane on the tarmac in the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince. More are expected on Thursday. The French news agency AFP says a total of some 2,500 personnel are anticipated. They are led by Kenya, with contributions from a number of countries, mostly in Africa and the Caribbean, on a mission blessed but not managed by the United Nations. The African National Congress, ANC, says it is concerned about what it calls outlandish and outrageous demands by specific cabinet positions in the media. President Cyril Ramaphosa is working to form a government of national unity from among the 10 political parties that have signed the statement of intent to be part of the government. The South Africa Mail and Guardian reported Tuesday that the Democratic Alliance, DA, party wants more than twice the number of cabinet positions it is being offered. ANC national spokesperson Malangi Bengu Munsiri says negotiating through the media is an act of bad faith.
The ANC has noted with concern that some parties have been making outlandish and outrageous demands for specific cabinet positions in the media. Negotiating through leaking demands to the media is an act of bad faith, and this practice will not help the cause of any of the parties in the negotiating table. It is only the president who has the final say on the appointment of his cabinet. A government of national unity cannot be held to ransom by any single party. The people need a government to be established sooner rather than later. The ANC confirms that since the announcement of the historic agreement between 10 South African political parties to form an ANC-led government of national unity for the 7th Democratic Administration, phase 2 of the establishment of the GNU is well underway, with highly anticipated announcement of the cabinet by President Cyril Ramaphosa that is now drawing close. The outcome of the 2024 national and provincial elections made it clear that 30 years into democracy, South Africans want political parties to work together to solve the important challenges facing the country and to improve the lives of our people.
That was ANC National Spokesperson Malangi Bengu Masiri. The audio is courtesy of the ANC Community Media. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 26th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The security situation in Somalia is growing tense. This week, Somalia's UN envoy accused Ethiopian troops of illegally crossing the two countries' shared border and confronting local security forces. Ethiopia is a member of the African Union Transition Mission in Somalia, also known as ATMIS, which is expected to conclude operation in the country on December 31st after 17 years in the country. For more on the security situation in Somalia, VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached Abdi Ismail Samatar, a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament.
Somalia is a miserable country, unfortunately, for most of its people. The level of corruption in the so-called government of the center and the provinces is out of this world, and the level of divisions within the states and the community is so deep, which has been creating all kinds of problems for the country, has been ignored in the past. And so with the imminent departure of ATMIS, the terrorist group Al-Shabaab, among others, will be encouraged. The question is whether the center and the leadership in Mogadishu will be wise enough to shift gears and change agendas and try to bring the community together on a genuine basis to be able to confront this challenge. The rest of the world is not going to do the defense for Somalis. They have to do for themselves. And that suggests that the leadership has to change or change its strategy. Without that, I think we will be looking at a rat hole and a rabbit hole down the pike.
Ethiopia is part of the ATMIS peacekeeping force in Somalia, but this week Somalia accused the Ethiopian forces of an incursion. How do you reconcile the two?
The Somali regime in Mogadishu and in the provinces have had this illusion that Ethiopia was going to provide security. Ethiopia creates instability in the country for its presence to be justified. That has been the case all along, from before the Union of the Islamic Courts in the early part of the 2000s to the present. And so Ethiopia's incursion into the country is nothing new. The challenge is what the Somali government and Somali people are going to do about that. I don't think if the Ethiopian government's troops leave ATMIS with ATMIS, yeah, Al-Shabaab will capture a few places, but over the long haul, the Somalis will have to take the challenge to Al-Shabaab. That's the only way they can liberate themselves. Al-Shabaab has been around since 2006 or 7 or 8. ATMIS has been there, or the African Union forces have been there since 2008. And that hasn't changed the reality on the ground. So the earlier they leave and the earlier the Somalis wake up to the reality that they have to do this job for themselves, the better the Somali people will be.
That's Abdi Ismail Samatar, a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. He spoke from Johannesburg, South Africa, with VOA's Douglas Mpuga. Officials in Zimbabwe, which is facing a growing problem of substance abuse, especially among unemployed youth, say arrests have surged in 2024, with close to 2,400 people taken into custody so far this year. Officials, however, say efforts to curb the problem are hampered by economic difficulties. Columbus Mavunga reports from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare.
That's the radio station in Zimbabwe urging citizens to desist from using drugs. Authorities say drug abuse is a rising problem which they are facing to end, citing marijuana and crystal methamphetamine as the substances mostly used. Zimbabwean Information Minister Jennifer Muswere says the cabinet recently approved a review of fines from $30 to $400 or imprisonment for period not exceeding 2 years for any business convicted of selling illicit drugs.
The fight against the scourge of drug and substance abuse will continue across all provinces of Zimbabwe. Monitoring, surveillance and law enforcement activities continue with a total of 2,373 individuals having been arrested, while 48 bases were identified, raided and destroyed in 6 provinces. Religious organizations have also embraced the fight against drug and substance abuse through campaigns encouraging particularly the youth to live drug-free lives.
Oscar Pambuka was recently released from jail after serving time for drug abuse, says more is needed to fight the vice, such as job creation. He says he started taking crystal meth after he and his wife divorced and he had no job.
And I began to associate with new characters. They became my new friends. Within those associations, I fell in love with a drug called crystal meth during that time. It used to make me feel comfortable. It used to give me temporary joy. I thank God for the incarceration because there's weight loss, you lose the financial resources, the networks, you lose a lot of networks because a lot of people don't want to associate with druggies. You also lose your mental cavity.
Officials say Zimbabwe's economy has been impacted by U.S. sanctions against the government for alleged corruption and human rights abuses in the early 2000s. Critics attribute the economic decline to corruption and bad policies by Harare. Representatives from government and UN agencies in Zimbabwe are expected to meet with President Emmerson Mnangagwa in Harare this Wednesday to devise a national action plan on drug and substance abuse. Columbus Mavungam, VOA News, Harare.
Nigerian authorities have declared a national emergency and activated response operations to control the spread of a cholera outbreak that has killed more than 50 people. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The Nigerian Center for Disease Control, or NCDC, said Tuesday that its decision to activate the National Cholera Emergency Operations Center followed a risk assessment conducted by authorities last week. NCDC said the assessment showed the country was at high risk of the disease and that the fatality rate from cholera stood at 3.5% of cases. So far, 53 people have died out of more than 1,500 recorded cases in the country. Nigeria's largest city and economic hub, Lagos, is the most affected. Jide Idris is the Director General of the NCDC.
Having considered all the data available, there has been an increasing trend of suspected cases nationwide. There are 4 levels of risk. You have low, medium, high, and very high. We've seen more cases now in more states than we did in last year.
National health authorities say they will work with affected state authorities to ensure rapid case detection, analysis, and management. The latest outbreak comes as the EU pledged millions to help fund vaccine production in Africa. The continent depends on imports for more than 90% of its vaccine doses. Last week, the NCDC said Nigeria had no cholera vaccines and is waiting for fresh supplies. Chukwunanso Ume is a public health analyst. He says the threat is serious.
I'm happy that government actually declared an emergency on this. I think the virulence level is actually going very high, so there is a possibility of transmission. So in terms of the severity of the symptoms, it's kind of higher. Then the rate at which it's transmitted is quite also higher.
Cholera is a seasonal disease in Nigeria, and authorities warn the impact could worsen with the rainy season. The disease spreads through contaminated food and water, causing severe diarrhea and death if not treated. Ume says socioeconomic problems are affecting the way the disease impacts Nigerians.
Cholera is a hygiene-related waterborne disease. With the current hardship within the country, people are struggling to make ends meet. I think one of the key basic things in terms of minimizing this for now, which is improving awareness of what people are supposed to do. So sensitizing people, community mobilization.
In 2018, Nigeria recorded 830 deaths from more than 42,000 cases of cholera, the highest numbers in recent years. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The first debate of the 2024 U.S. presidential election takes place tomorrow, Thursday, but it isn't the candidates' first time debating with each other. View senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Presutu looks back to 2020 for some clues about what we will see and hear in the debate between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump.
When these two last met,
let people know you're a senator. I'm not going to answer the question.
Why
because,
would you answer that
because
question?
Because the question is, the question is,
one was first-term President Donald Trump.
I've done more in 47 months. I've done more than you've done in 47 years, Joe.
The other, long-term politician, Joe Biden.
People out there need help.
The 90-minute matchup was filled with chaos and interruptions.
You shut up, man. Listen, who is on your list, Joe? This
Who's
is
on your
so,
list?
Gentlemen,
this
I think
this is so just unprecedented.
VOA asked voters what they remembered about that debate.
Oh, gosh, that was a while ago.
I remember that Trump was, you know, a superior debater.
Trump was obviously sort of employing these, like, very childish tricks, interrupting him constantly, and Biden sort of wasn't really having any of it.
This same political theater is expected Thursday.
Sir?
With $1 billion,
if you get rid of that,
you know what, you're
way
not.
But could be tempered because of new rules. In this debate, a candidate's microphone will be muted when it's not his turn to speak. Biden voter Chet Edelman likes the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it didn't have to come down to that, but I mean, given the last debate, I think that's a good policy or protocol.
One of the more memorable lines in this 2020 debate came when then-President Trump was asked to condemn white supremacists. Analysts say he issued an alert.
I promise. Stand back and stand by.
Both men were asked if they would accept the election results that year.
If it's a fair election, I am 100% on board. But if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that.
I will accept it, and he will too. You know why? Because once the winner is declared after all the ballots are counted, all the votes are counted, that'll be the end of it.
When Trump lost the election, his backers stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th in an attempt to overturn the results. Analysts predict this debate won't change the minds of voters who have already decided. Via Zoom, Peter Loge is the director of the School of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University.
Supporters of Joe Biden are going to dismiss his slips of tongue or his misstatements, because that's kind of who Joe Biden is, and he's kind of always been that way. Trump's supporters similarly are going to say, yeah, well, he's just Trump. He's speaking off the cuff. Take him seriously, not literally.
Ben Cox, an undecided voter, knows what he wants to see on Thursday.
A lot more love, I think, to bring us together.
A second debate between the presidential candidates is scheduled for September, but that could depend on how things go on Thursday. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News.
And that's it for this Wednesday, June 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.